Welcome to Earth's Mighty Weirdos. We have all returning. Maya, were you on for Hawkeye at all?
The first episode.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's returning for their second time, at least with Hawkeye as well. For her third week in a row, we do have not Maya there. We have Sarah from the Nerd Emporium on Instagram. Sarah, how are you doing this evening?
Hi, everybody. I'm good. I just finished putting together the Avengers Compound Lego set with my nephew.
Nice. How long did that take?
Probably 45 minutes. Not too bad. I'm still teaching them.
For her second week in a row, Miss Kara. Kara, how are you north of the border? How was Boxing Day?
It was good. I spent a lot of money from the comfort of my own bed, which is the way that I like it.
That is a grand old time. There are no torches. There are no pitchforks. There are no lanterns. We are not burning the place down. So that is the good news there. And welcome back to the show, Maya. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Cannot complain. Had a great holiday, so I'm excited to chat with y'all.
Good. Well, we're excited. We're excited to get into it. We are starting an hour earlier than normal. So if you are catching us on replay because you didn't know the time change, thank you so much for tuning in. You can find us anywhere you find your podcast. Don't worry about me. I am feeling just fine. I just sound a little bit different. So we're going to go. Justin says, trust the bro. Main Bun Rudder's here, says, let's go. Patrick's here. Mark Valentine is here. This gift, Rogers the Musical t-shirt, a super-powered sensation from Mark Valentine. Thank you so much, Mark. Alex is here. Patrick is listening while it works. Thank you so much. He also loves the shirt. Jalen is here. Jalen received her gift from Spider Sunday. Jalen, I regret to inform you. That shirt does exist in a Sebastian Stan version as well, but the option was on the table just of those three. So if you need the link, let me know. Stephanie says, ladies represent. Absolutely. We are very excited to have the ladies in the house today. Ryan's here. Hope you're feeling better, Ryan. Somebody says they like my shirt. Facebook user, you can click the link in the comments above you that says StreamYard/Facebook. Give them permission so we can see who you are, who we're talking to. Well, let's get into it. There's no other way to get into an episode of Earth's Mightiest Weirdos than without going to the world according to Jax. Hey, Jax, how are you?
Hey, Dad.
Show everybody your cool shirt that you got for Christmas.
Oh, no.
Shang-Chi, right?
Yeah.
You like Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to get into talking about Hawkeye. At the end of our episode, we're going to talk all about the finale throughout this episode, and then we're going to each give our Mount Rushmore of moments from the episode. Unless you're Kara, you're going to give four total Mount Rushmores of moments. But Jax is going to let us know his Mount Rushmore of moments after he tells us if he had a good Christmas or not.
I had a really good Christmas.
What was your favorite gift?
I don't know.
Your Grogu Lego set, probably, yeah, right? Yeah, that's already been built and he's up on the dresser.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jax, what were your Mount Rushmore of moments from all six episodes of the TV show Hawkeye?
Number one was the Hank Pym arrow. I thought that was a pretty cool moment in the in all the episodes.
Yeah, the giant arrow that comes down after the big car chase. That's a good one. Number two was when
Kate actually gets to talk to Elena for the first time the whole time in the apartment. That was
the girls' night with the mac and cheese and the hot sauce. Yeah, that's a really good one. That's definitely going to come up many times throughout our Rushmores, I think. How about number three?
Number three was when that kid was talking to Jack about going back to jail, and then he said, do you remember when you peed your pants at the Hamptons? How's that?
Do you remember when you peed your pants in the Hamptons? I do. Everyone does.
Everybody does.
That's a great one. Talking to Armand the Seventh. And then when Grills picks up Armand the Seventh when he's leaving the party.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm just trying to save you, man. Like, it's so funny. Yeah. Remember when you peed your pants in the Hamptons? That's a great one. How about number four? What was your number four moment?
Hawkeye shot an arrow, and then when he shot the second one, it cut the first one in half.
When he split the arrow in half, yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Perfect. Any other moments you want to make sure you talk about?
No.
Who is your favorite character from the entire show?
I don't know.
There is one correct answer, and his name is Jack Duquesne.
Okay.
All right. All right. All right. That is the world according to Jax. You remember when you peed your pants in the Hamptons? I do. Oh, everyone does. So funny.
That was also one of my 15, so I'll just scratch that off. We'll just take care of that right out the gate.
Jack Duquesne is vindicated, and I love that man. We're going to talk about Jack here in just a little bit. Mark says, can we just talk about the destruction of a Christmas icon? I'm sure we will get to it.
Yeah.
Jax met Stephanie's dog this week named Bucky. Kara would like that dog. That dog was incredible. I love that dog. He's 8 months old, and he just jumped all over Jackson. Jax got nervous, but it all worked out good. David says his favorite character from the show is Lucky Piano. Rob is here. He says he has the same shirt as Jax, so that works out well. Piano Rob is here. Well, in that case...
I'm not a threat, just an entertainer.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rob. All right, well, let's get into talking about the finale of Hawkeye. Maya, we'll start with you. Maya, did this finale live up to your expectations for what this show had said after the first five episodes?
I'm not going to lie, it didn't. But it still didn't make me change my view of the show. I felt like it was more so like Kingpin that didn't kind of tarnish the finale for me. But overall, I thought it was a good conclusion minus Kingpin. So.
Fair enough. So we'll get into Kingpin here momentarily. Kara, he didn't die. So therefore, this show lived up to your expectations. You're wearing a Falcon and Winter Soldier t-shirt. Did it overtake the Falcon and the Winter Soldier as your favorite show from the year?
I will say it at least tied or close to tied, but I have to watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier again first before I can officially say anything. But yeah, the finale for me was everything I wanted it to be. And so, yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
That's because you only wanted it to be one thing.
Yes. Yeah, happy.
That worked out well. It was my least favorite of the six episodes. I'm not going to lie. It had a lot going on. I didn't dislike the episode, don't get me wrong. But of the six, the pacing was just a little bit different. I don't know. There was a few things that didn't really work perfectly for me. And we'll talk about that throughout the night. Sarah, where did the finale land with you? Did it bring the show to a satisfying conclusion for you?
I think it did a good job of answering most of the questions that we had going into it. Wondering how they were going to wrap up some of those storylines they had going. But I also think it balanced that with leaving us wanting more of certain things. And so for that, I think it did a good job for what it was. Settling, you know, the main story bits with like the questions we had about Laura and Yelena and Clint and things like that, but also leaving open-endedness with Maya and Kingpin.
We don't often go sequentially here throughout Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, especially with Hawkeye. We've done more character breakdowns than we have anything else, and I've really enjoyed the conversation that has come from that. So let's stick right there with what you just said, Sarah. We find out that Laura is in fact Agent 19, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent 19. Credit to the receipt of David Rosen. He said that, is she an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? He absolutely nailed it. She's Agent 19. That is Bobby Morse. That is the Mockingbird. What did Kingpin want with the watch? Was he trying to track down Ronan's family? Does anybody have any thoughts on this, Maya? It looks like you had something there.
I know I was going to ask the same thing. I'm like, does it do something special? Is it like a spy kid's watch where something just like popped out? I was like, what is so important about this watch? So I was expecting that they showed the watch to do something, but we didn't get that. So I guess I have the same question.
Sarah, do you have any thoughts there? Like, the only way I can go, and now I think Vincent D'Onofrio was asked this question of what did Kingpin want with the watch, and I think he said, I'm wondering the same thing as the rest of you. My guess is he knew the connection to Ronan and he was going to be able to use it to get to his family. That's the assumption that I'm running off of.
I agree, and I think maybe it's just as simple as Agent 19 engraved on the back. He would be able to put the pieces together that way. I don't know, but it's fascinating, whatever it is.
That watch is cool. And I have a feeling, cool. I mean, if they come off with a knockoff, I can't afford a Rolex, obviously. A Boomer says he likes the shirt. So does he win? Like it, it's not quite that easy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I apologize. Rob says that it's his favorite sound clip ever, so we might just have to play it again.
I'm not a threat, just an entertainer.
Mark was happy with the ending that we did get for the show. There's just lots of good. Rob is now going mock. Yeah. Ing. Yeah. Bird. Yeah. So if you get a Dumb and Dumber reference, I am good. Alex says Kara wins background of the year. Absolutely. Welcome to Alex as well. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon in the MCU, says Ryan. I think quite the opposite. Bobby Morris is a completely different character within the MCU, but I would love to see her return somehow, some way. Maiden Runrunner says maybe the watch was just a retirement gift from S.H.I.E.L.D. for Agent 19. I agree with that. That's what I think it is. I just think it's a gift from Nick Fury. And Bobby's out of the game now. Name change to Laura, whatever we've got going on there. But Maya, let's start with you. You said he fell short of your expectations. Maya, have you seen the Daredevil series on Netflix?
I have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I would assume you came in with expectations for Kingpin. So what fell short for the character of Kingpin for you here?
I felt like and this is because I know like how they shot him. They tried to make him look bigger and more intimidating, but I just felt like it was just any other character that we just got to see on screen for it to be Kingpin. I felt, I don't know, I was kind of expecting like a more, not dramatic, but more, more of a presence with him at the end. And like the fight scenes just was so corny to me. And his dialogue too. And granted, I know him as Goran from Law and Order Criminal Intent, so I know he's changing his voice. He does not sound like that. So it's almost like him like kind of impersonating what he thinks Kingpin's voice is supposed to be. Granted, I know a similar voice he had in the Daredevil series, but it's been a few years since I seen that to remember his voice. And I don't know. And the whole idea of like Maya shooting him, we know he's not dead. So I felt like for them to introduce him in this series, it didn't really give us an idea of where he's going. And also, what is his true motivations? Is it he's just the head of the tracksuits? I feel like all my context from Kingpin is what I know outside of this series. So for anyone who was watching and never knew who he was, didn't see into the Spider-Verse, you're like, oh, is that it? So that's kind of how I viewed it. But I'm looking forward to seeing him again, for sure.
Yeah, Maya, to your point, we do not believe he's dead. And pulling directly from the source material, the comic books, this is the character of Echo who has a gun pulled on him, and we still see him. There's a rumored that they cut a post-credit scene of Clint just sharing a message with Kingpin saying, don't come after me or else just bad things are going to happen. I can see... Now knowing what Disney's mindset was, they're not even giving us a post-credit scene like that because, hey, it's Christmas, happy-go-lucky, whatever. Like, they never were going to kill this guy. So it worked out okay for Kara's standpoint. Kara, where do you stand with Kingpin? This was your first introduction to him outside of Into the Spider-Verse. You do know the big bowling ball character from there. But corny was not a word I expected to hear from Maya. That really caught me off guard.
Yeah, I mean, I felt differently, I guess, as somebody who hasn't seen him before. I thought they did a good job of showing kind of who he is when Kate shoots him with the arrow and he just rips it out and she's like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, I think to me, that was all the context I needed, aside from him beating up a 22-year-old girl that was like a quarter of his size and didn't care about it. Like, I can clearly see that he's, you know, a not so nice man. I wasn't bothered. I don't think that he was a focal point in the show. I think he was just like a little added piece. So to me, I saw it as a bonus, not as something that I was gypped with. And I think that we'll see him more in the future. So I wasn't bothered by any of that. I know some people, Brian, you included, were frustrated with some of the like realistic aspects of it. But I also think that the show started with a scene with massive metal looking aliens floating through New York City. So if we're like picking bones about what's realistic in this show and what's not, I feel like this is just not the bone to pick.
And you bring it up, and I will say it now. the Chitauri is far more realistic than how fast Kate's mom gets the dead body out of the driver's seat, hops behind the wheel of the car, turns it around, and gets up to speed to run Kingpin through that wall. That is more unrealistic than the Chitauri taking over New York City.
I disagree.
That took me out of it so bad. Because you can see a shot of Kingpin and the car is still like there. Like, it takes me out of it so bad when Kate's mom ends up behind the wheel of that car that quickly. It really, really bugged me. Brandon says that it's a struggle for him too. Not as intimidating for sure. I love the character of Kingpin, and I thought everything we got in this episode was really, really good. The only thing I would have preferred is that we had confirmation that he's not dead. You don't see a body, like he's not dead. Like he's not. You don't bring in the character of He Who Remains as the only version of Kang that we're ever going to get in the MCU. The reason you can use him is because you're building to something future, in the future of the MCU. So the way they pulled that off with Jonathan Majors at the end of Loki, similar to what they did with this character of Kingpin. Sarah, where did you land with Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin in this episode?
I think I'm a happy medium between Maya and Kara. I enjoyed him in Daredevil. But there was just, I wasn't dissatisfied with this appearance in Hawkeye, but I feel like there was something left me wanting with him. I can't pinpoint what it was. 'Cause we saw that he was brutal. Like he's intimidating and scary. And the way that he was intimidating Kazi there right after they talked with Maya. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just the way they left things off there with that gunshot. I'm not sure.
The mental manipulation game that he plays.
Yeah.
I get so mad when he signs to Maya, "I love you." And it's just like, and Maya knows, like he knows that Maya's gone. And then he says, tells Kazi, like, she's got to go. The Bishop woman's got to go. Like in Kazi, you can see the regret in his face. Let's stick with that character of Kazi. Sarah, you've raved about him the last several weeks, how much Fraffy has owned this role. We got really good stuff here in the finale. He really does seem like he's probably gone.
Yeah, that kind of surprised me. I thought that they were setting him up for the clown character. I can't remember what the actual character's name is from the comics, but I thought they were setting him up to become the next, you know, the next Maya, the next head of that branch of the organization. So that surprised me. And I like that actor. I like Fraffy. I'm kind of bummed about that.
When he said, "This is my life and it was never supposed to be yours." Like he loves Maya, but he kind of has to do what he had to do. Brandon says, "I think he should have been the final intro as the next season on Hawkeye type of introduction, giving him a scary entrance and boss feel." He's not the next season of Hawkeye though. He's somewhere else in the MCU, and Echo is somewhere else in the MCU within her own show. So, and we don't know, like Jeremy Renner has said many times that this was kind of it. So we don't know if he's coming back. Season two of Hawkeye, I think, is the lead character. The main character of this show was Kate Bishop. It was not Clint Barton, which is completely fine with me, but I just think everything that it worked, I loved it. Kazi's character throughout the episode of Tell the Boss Christmas Came Early, finally seeing him as the henchman that he is, was really good. I really liked the scene that Jax was talking about when Clint splits the two arrows and he catches the one in front of him and he goes, "Hey, nice shot." And Clint's like, "Yeah, no crap." I'm like, just screams it from across the ice rink. I loved it. Maya, where did you stand with that character of Kazi? Are you sad to see him go?
Yeah, but I felt like his presence was very powerful, because going back to the first episode, they were literally groomed to be a part of the Tracksuit Mafia as toddlers. So the idea of him basically spending his whole life, it's not like something he just got into, he was older. He was basically groomed and he had these expectations that, you know, stay loyal, do whatever you have to. And him basically not being able to get what he was promised or what he thought he could get, I thought it was a really like great way they end up having the character. But I'm very curious to know like who's going to be doing the interpreting for Maya now. Like after that, I'm like, what is like, I wonder who they're going to bring in to like take on that, because it's like him being that familiar person in her life. I thought that was like a really cool way to like show who's doing the interpreting. So yeah, but overall, I really liked his character. I'm sad to see him gone, but I felt like it was necessary to move the story forward, especially for Maya.
Kara, did you have any attachment to Kazi here?
Nope. I was fine to see him go. I was not as attached to him as everyone else. I have a question, though. Maybe you guys can help me out. I've watched this the last episode like 4 or 5 times now. I can't figure out how he dies. Does he do it to himself, or does Maya...
I think Maya grips his forearm and shoves
and just pushes
him. Yeah, I mean he kind of did it to himself because he's the idiot that picked up the arrowhead and went after her, and she's far more capable than he is. But I think she kind of forces it into him. So, but he kind of did it to himself. That's how
I couldn't tell if he was sacrificing himself like for her, or if she just bested him.
I don't think that was his plan. I think she just bested him. But let's stick with somebody you are attached to, Kara, and that is the character of Maya Lopez. She remarkably heals very quickly on the bruise on the side of her eye. She goes full nice guy turn by just letting her hair down, which works out good. She uses the motorcycle very, very tactfully. But Kara, where do you stand with the character of Maya Lopez, and where we're headed with that next series starring her?
I just love her, man. Like, everything that she does, I think, is just so cool. Like, her having, like, leaving her leg exposed during that fight was so badass to me. I loved that. And then, her vacation hair, like, I loved that, too. Just everything that she does, I will watch whatever we get with her.
Speaking of vacation, some people had an issue with Kingpin and his vacation look, the Hawaiian red shirt. Comic book accurate. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And if you hate on it, I mean, it's the source material. They did what they could. I thought it was great. Maya, the character of Maya Lopez, aka Echo, you're all in on her series as well. Was there anything of her character throughout this show, or particularly in this episode, that really got you excited?
Overall, she was amazing. I love when we were able to see a little bit of her apartment. Was it 2 episodes ago, maybe 3? Because it really showed more of her like Native American roots, like how she decorated her apartment. So I think that was cool. But the final battle was really cool. I know I thought of Sarah when I was the motorcycle. It was so Nat vibes in that scene. So I think I'm literally so excited. I wish Echo was the next series we got, because
yes.
I can't imagine waiting till that series to see her again. I don't even know when it's coming out, but I'm really excited.
I don't think anybody really does. I mean, it seems like the fact that it's announced, probably it's 2023, but we don't know for sure. Sarah, Maya Lopez, floor is yours.
I think she was amazing. I liked how they handled her turn. I think that it was a slow burn, but that was okay for me. Because it earned the moment where she does turn. And I liked it. The stakes were great. Alacqua Cox, I said this last week, but she had no acting experience before her audition for this show. I think she was just stunning. She was great. The fight choreography. Oh, Heidi Moneymaker, shout out, who was Black Widow's stunt double, Natasha's stunt double. She was the fight coordinator for the show. Did a fantastic job. So yes, I love Echo. She's great. I can't wait to see her again.
Heidi Moneymaker. Man, yeah. That's awesome. Might have to change one of my daughter's names after that. That's way cool. Kriston is bragging, saying he told Kara what's up. He also says, what's up, beautiful people, and to me as well. Thank you so much, Kriston. Good to have you here. Katie's here so much. Thanks for joining us, Katie. Piano Rob says he's here for the vacation look as well. So Frankie was not into Kazi either. So I mean that works out. I thought he was great. You could always give me any more Kazi of after that scene with him in the car with Clint when Clint throws his gun.
Oh my gosh. That should have been on my list. That scene to me was so funny. Cause like, why would Clint just throw his gun? And why would they show us that?
Because so it was good. Fantastic.
So funny.
That was funny.
That was fantastic. Katie's doing my job for me. Thank you so much. Katie says, don't forget to hit the thumbs up. Absolutely. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a like. Give us a share. Let your friends know that we're here talking about Hawkeye. Let's go next to Eleanor Bishop. We start at the beginning of the episode. Kara, you hate Eleanor Bishop. You've hated her since the beginning of the episode or since the series. She had her daughter's best interests at heart. Maybe she didn't actually kill her husband, but she definitely killed Armand Duquesne, the third, not the seventh. But she killed Armand Duquesne. She wants out of Kingpin's thing, and that's not exactly how this works. But Sarah, you've not liked Eleanor Bishop at all, and she doesn't seem to understand the consequences of her actions.
Yeah, no, I have not. Did you ask Kara that, or did you?
Go ahead.
Okay. I thought she was kind of vile there at the end. And Kara did point this out, the gaslighting. Kara, you talked about that. You pointed it out. That was good.
Oh, man. When she's talking, is this what heroes do, Kate? Arrest their mothers on Christmas? Like, yes, if their mother is horrible. Like, yes, that's exactly what they do. And just for anybody who's had a parent or somebody close to them in life that is like that, I think that hit all of us a little bit of a different way than maybe everybody else watching. But yeah, that got me.
Gross. Super gross.
She tells Wilson Fisk, and when he says, in the spirit of the holidays, like, I ask you to reconsider. I love that line. I think that line is awesome. We actually got to hear it twice because it was in Yelena's recording as well. But she just has no grasp of who he is, what he is. And he says, hey, we need to remind the people that this is my city. Like, he's a bad dude. Like, and if that did not come across, if this is the first time you've really seen Kingpin within the MCU's context, even though Daredevil canon, not canon, like, I'm not going to have that debate right now. But like, if this is your first introduction to him, like, Kingpin's a bad, bad dude. And Hell's Kitchen, that part of New York, a lot of bad things go down there and he's in charge of it. We're going to see a lot of really dark stuff that comes from this guy. And him saying, one, he used the term Avengers, which was cool. He's one of the Avengers, has taken a big interest in our operation. I thought that was really cool. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would have beads from the 70s, like Fillmore from Cars, like kind of hanging around in his office. But regardless, like,
yeah, that was weird, huh?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, there was a lot of Die Hard vibes from this entire show, especially this particular episode. Maine Munrunner has a great call out, says him throwing the gun reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy. That was my favorite knife. That's awesome. That's awesome. Maya, where do you stand with Eleanor Bishop? Do you hate her as much as the rest of us?
Honestly, I did not hate her in the beginning. But, I mean, obviously we got confirmation that she killed Armand, and she was just willy-nilly willing to set up her fiancé. I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely not. Honestly, I felt like I was in a middle ground because it seems like for this series, there was a lot of setup. Like, are they going to be bad? Are they not? With Maya, with Jack Duquesne. So I'm like, maybe there's a situation where she's being blackmailed or something like that. And it's funny how at the end of the series, we kind of find it's a mix of both. But I really hated the victim mentality at the end. I'm like, don't try to justify murder. Like, yeah. And she never even changed her tone. I felt like it was kind of weird how she communicated with Kate at the end. Like Kara said, it was very much gaslighting. But it wasn't even the, like, tone of her voice didn't change. Like, if you take the clip from the first, like, season when she was just talking to her daughter, or the first episode, I just hated that we didn't see, like, a change in how she communicated after she was kind of found out. I don't know. It's like
but that's what was good about her, though.
Cold.
Yeah.
If you yes.
If you watch back, though, like, when all the specific moments happen throughout the whole show that kind of exposes her a little bit, she never flinches. And that's what's good about her the whole time. And that tone, that gaslighting tone that she uses at the end, she uses with Kate the entire season because she's always putting Jack first above Kate, and she's always trying to make Kate feel some type of way. Like, she's very consistent from start to finish. So I did appreciate that about her character, but I did not like her.
Yeah. And she's still trying to get Kate to question herself. Like, are you really a hero? Are you really?
Yes.
Like, oh yeah, yeah, she's a freaking hero and she's amazing. Yeah. And her and our next character who we're going to discuss, and we're going to start in the top right corner.
One more thing. I just wanted to say she's a horrible businesswoman. Why does your daughter have full access of all security? And one, who does a Christmas party on Christmas Eve? I'm like, there's never a corporate Christmas party anyway.
Yes, I agree with that. Like, why are we celebrating everything on Christmas Eve? Like, yeah, well, you deserved it. I was going to move on to Yelena Belova, but we're actually not going to move on to Yelena just yet because we are going to go with the man himself.
Hello, sweetie.
I'm just going to leave this on our screen for the rest of the episode. Jack Duquesne is a hero, and I love Jack Duquesne so much. The fact that he brought the sword to the Christmas party and he gets the chance to just say, oh, this is my moment. This is my time to shine. And when he looks Kate in the eye and he says,
hello, sweetie.
It's perfect. I love Jack Duquesne so much. I've been in on Jack Duquesne since the very beginning of this episode. Sarah, Jack Duquesne, Trevor Slattery, Justin Hammer, rank them.
Oh, Jack. Jack is number one.
Hello, sweetie.
It might be recency bias. I love Trevor. I love Justin. But there's just something so earnestly goofy. Like, he's just such a dingus. And I love it. But he's so sweet. I love him.
I love him so much. Kara, we did say Justin Hammer.
Had this flown in from San Francisco. It's Italian, though. Organic ice cream.
Kara, where does Jack rank among the three of Justin Hammer, Trevor Slattery, and Jack Duquesne?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm going to put him in the middle, and I'm going to put Trevor on top. But this could change at any given moment.
If Justin Hammer comes back, I reserve my right to.
Yeah, exactly.
As much as I love Jack Duquesne, you cannot top.
Well, I panicked, but then I handled it.
Trevor Slattery is still my number one, but the three of those guys having a beer together is something that I need as a Marvel one-shot. Maya, do you love Jack Duquesne as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like someone I was like, oh, he's awesome. Like, that bit, like Jack's mention with him and Armand the Seventh, I was cracking up. Like, that scene was so funny. And it's almost like him bringing that sword to the holiday party. You can't understand why Eleanor was able to take advantage of him. Like, not that you just almost beat a murder charge and you're walking around with a sword in public. What?
Well, and Clint goes, kind of a weird flex. Like,
Super weird. And I was just like, but I really wish we got to see him reacting to the Eleanor news, like, oh, he was being framed, basically. Just to see, because it seemed like he, I don't want to say idiot, but like, he was so aloof, like, had no idea what was going on, which made it, so I definitely see why people liked his character a lot. But it was almost like he had no, his equivalent, I don't want to make that comparison. To like Jones from WandaVision, kind of just being there, but not really having a ton of significance, but offering some comedic relief.
Yeah, but you have Phil Jones, who fits well within this game. We might have had to have Phil Jones to this. I love Phil Jones so much. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who Phil Jones is, he's the mustache that was walking around in WandaVision.
Yeah. When Bombshell is asking him to join her guild, and he's like, oh, I got some blood on my tie. Like, yeah.
And then that was it. Was that
some kind of leisure activity? Like, just everything that he says is so good.
I've never worked a day in my life. I said that last week, and it was just so, so good. I loved it so much. Man, those three having a beer, like, it has to happen. Gosh. Like, it has to happen. I love those guys so much. Jack Duquesne is my favorite.
Hello, sweetie.
It's my favorite character from this entire episode, or from this entire series. I loved it so much. Is Sloane limited to call out from the comics at all, Sarah?
I don't remember it. I'm not sure.
They say he took the fall for Sloane, and then we never get a mention of it again. We never really get it explained to us. So I don't. It's just some front business, I'm sure, money laundering or something that's going on. Piano Rob says Trevor is on top for him because he's an entertainer.
I'm not a threat. Just an entertainer.
So, I mean, that's fair. I'd love that clip because you can hear Morris in the background. So we're going to move on now to the important characters. Not that Jack isn't important because he's the star. But Sarah, Yelena Belova, we get another great scene from her and Kate in the when Kate slaps her in the elevator. She's like, "What was that?" And she's like, "I'm so sorry."
I don't know.
Okay, but then she goes full Buddy the Elf by lighting up all the buttons on the elevator. Sarah, what did you? Was there anything that didn't work with Yelena in this episode?
Oh, that's a great question. I
think there's one thing for me that didn't work that I wish they would have just done earlier.
That they should have done earlier?
I wish they would have resolved Kate and or Clint and Yelena earlier on so she could have helped them take care of Kingpin or whatever else that had to happen. I think part of why people were so underwhelmed with Kingpin as well as potentially underwhelmed with Yelena was the fact that they were happening both at the exact same moment in time. I think had Yelena been able to help and be a friend, be an ally for Kate and Clint in that moment, I think that would have landed a lot better with everybody. And especially if you get Kingpin fighting all three of them, he comes off as a much bigger threat.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I land. But still, the stuff we got from Clint and Yelena, he's literally about to die and he gets the whistle out there. I mean, the fact that Clint tells her, Yelena talked about you forever. Hey, she was strong-willed. Like, I couldn't beat her. Like, that's the reason she's dead. I would assume as a massive Natasha Romanoff fan that this all really worked well for you.
Yes. It's actually one of my Rushmore moments was their whole conversation there on the ice. It felt very cathartic for both of them, which I think Yelena needed that closure because she didn't have any closure with Natasha, with her sister. And so I think being able to piece together what the last moments of her life were, I think was healing for her in a way. I loved how they didn't use her fuel for going after Clint was not just that Val said he was responsible for Natasha's death, but she also wanted to hold him accountable for the 5 years of murder spree that he did. And I think that was an important, for me, that was an important aspect of that, her, you know, drive for vengeance. Because he needed to answer for that. Like, it's not okay to just, I mean, yeah, they were bad guys, but that's a whole other philosophical conversation.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they addressed that. I'm glad they had that time together. Florence Pugh is just, she is perfection as Yelena. I did not expect to like this character as much as I do. I did not want to like her as much as I do. But she is growing on me. Yeah.
They accomplished so much by a 4 second. What makes you think you deserve to live or something to that effect? And he says, I don't. Like, and they completely accomplish all of everything, of all the recollection he's gone through. Again, what has he shared with Laura? She's still very much in on her husband and everything else going on there. Sarah, I want to get you before we move on to the other two talking about Yelena. Rob says they had to show that Kate could survive a solid villain alone fighting Kingpin. I don't know if I agree with that. If you can hang with Yelena, you can hang with Kingpin. Like, you can hang with anybody. That's kind of, I think we already had seen the capabilities of Kate. I think for me, I would have loved to have established more the character of Kingpin in that moment than the character of Kate, because I was already sold. That's where I live personally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that was a cool call out. I hadn't even thought about, you know, all of that, like a little mini Avengers team up against Kingpin. That would, maybe that's something they can build towards, you know, next season. That would be awesome.
Maya, how about you? Where do you stand on Yelena in this episode, the elevator scene? Better than the girls' night? I don't necessarily think it is. Some people think it's better than that conversation. But the elevator scene and then leading up to her confrontation with Clint.
I think the girls' night was a little bit better, but I loved how her and Kate's dialogue, it was like, should I treat you like my homegirl or should I treat you like a bad guy, a villain, a superhero. So
again, very, very Hawkeye and Black Widow from Captain America Civil War. Like, yeah. He's still friends.
It was, I love the dynamic though, when they were in the, just this whole last episode. But it was a little jarring for, I always like, oh wow, like Elena's pretty self-righteous to be like basically killing people for money. I'm like, you talk about him being Ronin, you just like a millionaire head of a security agency just hired you to kill somebody. So it felt, it was tough because it's like the Yelena we got from Black Widow, she was a little bit more, not innocent, but like she was a good person. And this one, you kind of just see her kind of like where she is now, kind of trying to figure out where she belongs in this weird, okay, I have powers, I have, you know, upgraded abilities, but where do I fit in? Which was cool. But so I felt a little weird when she was coming at Clint. I mean, there were just multiple kicks to the head. I'm like, I can't, or no, with her little stick. I'm like, this is really hard to watch. But overall, I love the dialogue between them. I just wish she was able to come home with them for Christmas, or at least pull a Vin Diesel and like watch them from afar. Something, because it's like, you know, she has no family. That's why she was so hurt. And when him, like when he actually did that whistle, it like just, it showed like her inner child coming out. So you can tell she just wants that bond to kind of fill that void with Natasha. So
it's, I like was really said bummed. Bucky, like somebody said Bucky to Steve, like, yeah. It had that same exact thing.
She does reference her daddy though, so I wonder if they're still in touch, her and Alexi and Melina.
Oh yeah.
Maybe that's who she spent Christmas with.
Her daddy says it's good for her. Patrick says, I'm actually surprised Val wasn't mentioned or seen in the finale. Yeah. I'm not. Val's not the new Nick Fury. She's not that important that they're gonna bring her up constantly. If for no other reason than, and I do apologize, my daughter is on the other side of that door having the time of her life. I'm not super surprised Val wasn't mentioned, just because I don't think Val is that important. She is important from whatever she's doing, whether it's the Thunderbolts or the Dark Avengers or whatever's going on there. But I think she's simply the person that hired Yelena, and it has nothing to do with the fact that she's working for Val, because I think she was just a contracted Black Widow assassin that's been hired to kill. I don't think it has anything to do with her boss necessarily. So
I was surprised that we didn't get her in some sort of end credits. I was surprised. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I was surprised at what we did get and surprised at what we didn't get there. So
Alex says, do you two think that Yelena was angry because she left her sister alone for 5 years? I don't know. I don't think Yelena's, for lack of a better term, that unhinged. I think she knew that there was literally nothing she could do to control the fact that she wasn't around for those 5 years. I'm sure that I wish I had been there kind of sinks in, but I don't know if anger is the right word. Am I off base there, Maya? Do you think?
I feel like she's, I don't know. I bet there's so many emotions. And so what we get is kind of just her thinking that she's doing what's right. But I feel like it could definitely be part of it.
There was a weird moment right before she went into the bathroom and got blipped when the other Black Widow says, how's your sister? And she gets a really weird look on her face.
Yes.
So there might be, she might have like a lot of guilt there for not being in contact for the, because 2016 to, what was it, 2019?
2018.
Yep. Maybe they didn't talk for a couple of years. Mm. I don't know.
That's a good call out. Jane Munrunner says that this show seems to put Val and Kingpin in the same circles. I don't disagree with that either. I think Eleanor Bishop had Val right on speed dial. I think she had a way of getting in touch with her, and she also had Wilson Fisk on speed dial. Kara, where do you stand with Yelena Belova after this show? You agreed with Sarah that you love her very, very much.
Yeah, I think that the show did something unexpected for me in that it gave me the closure for Black Widow that the Black Widow movie did not. I think that in Clint's grieving process and Yelena's grieving process, I too had a grieving process with losing Natasha Romanoff, which sounds ridiculous because they are fictional characters, but obviously they mean a lot. Yeah, they mean a lot to us, but also like you can parallel it to real life, and it like, this is why we like this kind of stuff, right? Is it helps us manage our own everyday garbage and goodness throughout
life. It's the entire reason this show exists, so I understand.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, the way that they had just every scene with Yelena in it, I felt so close to Nat. And same with Clint. And the how Jeremy Renner and Florence Pugh played that, I thought was really special. And in that last scene, like the first three times I watched it, I thought that she whistled the first part for some reason and he whistled the second part. And then on the last watch, I caught that he did the whole thing. And just to see how much both of them loved her and how they were grieving and how they each handled it kind of in the same way but differently was really special to watch. And just to have them kind of finally come to terms, because I was so frustrated that they were not on the same team this whole series, but to see them finally come to terms, I feel the same way. I hoped that they would be all together for Christmas, but there's always next Christmas, you never know.
True.
Yeah, I again, shout out to David Rosen. I think he's the first one to put that out there, that she would go to have Christmas. I wanted it really bad.
Also, her hair. We can't finish this episode. That braid was fire.
Amazing. Amazing.
The green jacket, like, yes. when the LARPers, like, can I take your jacket? She's like, no. He's like, okay. But then when Kate spins out of the jacket and, like, did you do that on purpose? Like, oh, man. Like, the way those two play off of each other. I loved it.
It's the perfect
fighting style, just everything.
It's the perfect next Black Widow and Hawkeye best friendship, and I'm here for it.
There is one thing I wish with Yelena they would have stuck on longer, and that's after she has that fight with Kate and she jumps out that window and we get that amazing camera shot that follows her 90 degrees onto the side of the building to run down. I wish they would have held that camera shot just a little bit longer, because that shot was really, really cool, seeing her run down the side of that building. I thought that was really great stuff. Well, let's go with who people assumed was the main character of the show before we got started. And he obviously still is one of the main characters. We find out that Clint is the maker of his own special trick arrows. The scene of them building their trick arrows together, I thought was really, really great stuff.
So great. And I think it just showed with that scene, and then there was another episode earlier in the season, that a lot of the stuff he can do by himself, he's not just relying on Stark Tech, Pym Tech. He, I guess, is an engineer of some sorts, has to have some sort of experience in that. And it just made him be like a more capable hero in my eyes, just seeing him put everything together. But overall, I felt like Clint did what needed to be done in this series. I mean, I absolutely adore Kate Bishop, and she did amazing. But I do not want to look over Clint, because the emotional, like, chops that he, like, had in this series was so great. And, like, how he treated his wife, how he treated Kate, how he treated Yelena. Like, we saw so much from him, even how he treated Maya. So I think his performance was the best in the MC, like the best I've seen in the MC, well, Clint performance I've seen in his other films.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously he had his whole show, but I adored his character.
He did this character justice for sure. I completely agree with that. Sarah, where do you stand on Clint Barton following this series and things that Clint did within this finale that really stood out to you?
I think, for me, like Kara said, and I think David mentioned it in the comics, this series for me, oh my God, I'm getting emotional. It feels like the closure. Like, this was the first time I thought, okay, she really might be dead. And to me, that means that this show did a really great job of giving everyone, not just Clint and Yelena, closure, but everyone closure. And if she's really gone, then I think this is the this would be a good send-off. This would, like David said, this would be the funeral that she didn't get in Endgame.
Kara, how about you? I know you've gone back and forth on how much you like Clint Barton. But you are in on this show, and the character of Clint Barton has definitely improved in your eyes as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, to be honest, I'm not sold on Jeremy Renner. So I think that was what was holding me back, you know, prior to this show. But what this show did was everything that you could have wanted, like everything that Marvel could have wanted to like highlight with Hawkeye. As Maya said, like from the way that he, or Maya or Sarah, from the way that he just treated women especially, but all the people in his life, the relationship he had with his wife was like in that scene where they're building the arrows and Kate takes a moment to tell him, like, you were just a normal person and you did what gods were doing. And you did it fearlessly, like that moved her. And the same thing, like everything that he's done, from the way that he treats his relationships to the way that he views what the right thing to do is and how he atones for his sins and all these kinds of things, like that is a hero. And that is somebody that we should look up to. His acting in this show was phenomenal. I cried every single episode, and every single episode was because of him. Mm-hmm. And just the way that he was processing grief, or when he was talking on the phone to his son and how he was so emotional in, you know, not being sure if he was going to make it home for Christmas or not, and, you know, processing like the fact that he might be leaving his children behind and all these kinds of things. Like, it was so well done. And yeah, like kudos to Jeremy Renner, because he really jumped notches for me.
When he jumps out of the window and lands in the Christmas tree and just decides to hang out there for a while, Rocky the Owl, who was a real owl from the Rockefeller tree last year, like Rocky the Owl, people have complained about his inclusion in this show. I loved him so much.
Loved it.
The fact that he took the shrunken Trusta Bros away, like, I loved Rocky the Owl so much. So he stays forever. Clint, like, has reached a point where Kate's still not going to listen to him. Like, hey, I'm going to stay in this tree. I'm going to get myself out. And she shoots him down. He's like, what just happened? Like, the tree falls down. But just the way that they went through that, him showing how capable he was, where do these trick arrows come from? You always credited him to Tony Stark and nothing else. Now Tony Stark still obviously has a lot to do with it because Stark Industries and everything else, but how capable Clint is that he can make his own trick arrows and everything that they can do. The shot of him on the ice rink where Kate comes sliding in on her knees, she slides for a very long time, but when he shoots that magnetic arrow and all the guns and the blue lightning around, like, legitimately great stuff. We get some really cool stuff that happens on that ice rink. Clint, just how much he cares for Yelena simply because he cares for Natasha, and that jumps off the screen. And that's something, and the cool, really neat callback that Clint said when he was talking to Yelena of, she told me how you guys got separated after she was flying that plane, like everything, like Natasha shared her life with him in a way she didn't share her life with literally anybody else. Mm-hmm. And how meaningful that was to him. And he didn't take that for granted. Frankie says, how can you not like Rocky the Owl? I completely agree, Frankie. Clint was so wonderful in Ultron as well. Glad he got to expand on that. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for the Barton family farm storyline within Ultron because I felt that it was simply a makeup for how mad Jeremy Renner was for being a villain for 2/3 of the Avengers film. And they were just trying to give him more of a hashed out character. If Kevin Feige's plan all along was, okay, then we're going to go Ronin, we're going to go Endgame, I believe that he knew that, but then we're going to go with this Hawkeye series. And the reason we need all of this to happen within Avengers Age of Ultron, that is what makes Kevin Feige a genius. I'm not saying he didn't think that all the way through, but it worked out so, so well. And the Barton family farm now is really, really great stuff when you go back and watch Avengers Age of Ultron. And in Avengers Age of Ultron, Tony Stark does look at Laura and say, this has to be an agent of some kind. Mm-hmm. So Tony absolutely, absolutely nailed that one. Maya, do you have anything else on Clint Barton before we move on and finish up talking about Kate Bishop and where we stand with the rest of the show?
Well, yeah, Kara definitely sparked another thought that I had. And I think it's really important you talked about, like, how he treated the women. If Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like, showcase, like, positive masculinity or healthy masculinity, same with this show. Because I think we're so used to seeing these, like, I'll do it myself, the diehards, the Mission Impossibles. the type of where it has kind of like a similar archetype, but him being able to like work with many different women in this series and it just be like a natural partnership, I felt spoke volumes. And it just showed, I don't know. I love it.
And then gave credit too, right? Like when he's in the ambulance afterwards with Kate and he's like, you know, sometimes people come around that spark something magical in you that you couldn't have without, like, he gives credit. Like, right. And that's something that we haven't seen before.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he has that moment with Kate is similar to his moment with Wanda, where he kind of gives her that Avengers pep talk. True. And he kind of does that with Kate, or he starts to, and then she turns it around and gives him the pep talk, which I really loved.
Mm-hmm. When you wore it, you wore your costume, like, and then when he's talking about how he needs to give everybody credit, and he goes, "Man, she nailed it with the elasticity." Like, I just thought that was all really great stuff. David's in the comments. He said, "Did anyone else wonder where the police were during the entire ice rink fight?" David is hung up on that, like I am with Kate's mom driving.
But this just goes back to my point. We started the series with metal aliens floating through New York. There was a big giant purple alien that they just fought. Like, this is just a it's just a bizarre thing to be hung up on.
One of the things that I was hung up on was not where the police were, but where Yelena went for like 15 minutes after she escaped the building.
Yeah,
and then she checked out. I don't know if she was watching them fight. I don't know.
Man, but that's cool arrow. Yeah, man, this is really cool. I could see that. I could absolutely see that. Stephanie says she wasn't more referring to the family farm storyline, but rather the Maximoff storyline. She just truly loves the Avengers speech to Wanda and his quips back to Pietro. That's fair. Main Munrunner sums it all up with hashtag because Marvel. It is the greatest cinematic universe that ever has existed and ever will exist. And I said that even being a bigger fan of Star Wars.
I was about to say, aren't you a bigger star?
But no, like the MCU is better storytelling than Star Wars. Like, hands down, no questions asked whatsoever.
Okay.
But speaking of Star Wars, join us Sunday night, Babu's Frickin' Podcast. We will be talking about The Book of Boba Fett. Episode 1 drops this Wednesday. We will be live on This Diz Life YouTube channel, 8 o'clock Sunday night. Talking about The Book of Boba Fett and everything that happens in that series, which does premiere on Disney Plus this Wednesday. Star Wars is still great, but from a storytelling standpoint, the MCU just does it for me. So let's get into it. Sarah, we're going to start with you. Hailee Steinfeld is an absolute star. The relationship that she has with Yelena Belova, with Clint Barton, every relationship that she had throughout this show is very, very impressive. I cannot wait to get more of Kate Bishop. What stood out to you, Sarah, in this finale about the character of Kate Bishop?
I think, and I mentioned this about Hawkeye, about Clint Barton, was that we got a very comics accurate Clint Barton aside from the whole wife and family thing. We got a very comics accurate Clint Barton in this
But he series. Does marry Bobby Morse at some point in the comics, does he not?
Yeah, but his love life is kind of all over the place.
Fair enough.
In the comics. But I love that they changed that. I love that he's grounded and, you know, it's good. Kate also, I think Haley's interpretation of Kate Bishop is probably pretty close to the character that I had in my head from reading the comics. Just her delivery of the, like, those sassy one-liners that she's got. And her chemistry, Hailee Steinfeld must be like super great to work with, because it seems like she has chemistry with all of her scene partners. The scene with her and Clint, where she gets Clint to open up about Natasha, where they're having daiquiris in their Christmas sweaters, and she gets him to open up about Natasha. I think there's a great balance between, like, she plays vulnerable really well, like in the scenes with her mom and with Clint, but then she can play tough, badass. You know, I wasn't sold on Hailee Steinfeld until I saw her as Kate, and I'm all in.
One of my favorite things about the character of Kate Bishop is how willing she is to admit when she's wrong, and she does it a lot. When she has the conversation about the guy with the Imagine Dragons tickets, and they went to see Maroon 5 instead. Yeah. Goes, so what's with the gun? But then Jack like saves her. And I mean, just in case you don't remember how Jack saved her, we see it here. But then she tells Jack like immediately, like, I'm so sorry that I did that to you. Like, and he goes, I've lost your mother. And she goes, yeah, me too. Like she's not willing to, or she's often willing to admit when she's wrong. And I think that's admirable. Kara, where do you stand with the character of Hailee Steinfeld / Kate Bishop here?
Kate gives me very big little Steve Rogers vibes. You know, like at the beginning of Captain America, the first Avenger, when he's so little.
Skinny Steve.
But skinny Steve, yeah, he never gives up. He cares so much about the people in his life, and he never gives up. He's constantly doing things outside of his capabilities. Like, that's very Kate Bishop. Like, she's constantly, like, fighting Kingpin and taking on all of these villains of the tracksuits and Maya and everybody. Like, she's trying to do it when she doesn't really have any like authority to do so. She doesn't have superpowers. She's just gung-ho. Like, she just never gives up, and that showed in every single episode that we see, which made me really excited for the future, because that, like, if she is taking the mantle from Clint as also a normal human being who just tries really hard and works really hard and has some really cool talents, that is going to get her pretty far, I think. And it's really enjoyable. She's got wonderful one-liners. She's got such a positive personality. She's constantly uplifting people, encouraging others. Like, she's very sassy, but she's never rude. Like, even with the LARPers, where she's like, oh, you guys are dedicated. Like, she's not saying that in like a rude way. Like, she genuinely is like, wow. So everything that she does, like, I thought was really cool. And it's really cool to see Clint mentor her throughout the show, and how she picks up little pieces, and how she snapped that little
cufflink,
okay, to get all the arrows. Like, I thought that was really cool. And just all the scene on the ice with her and Clint, like, in unison shooting off arrows, the choreography of that, like, shout out to whoever did that, because that was phenomenal. But seeing her and Clint with their arrows in slow motion with Avengers like music, like, all of that had me going. This whole episode, just, I know it wasn't everybody's favorite, but it was mine.
I think if we had not seen that shot of them on the Rockefeller Center ice shooting the arrows together, had we not seen that earlier, that would have been the most iconic shot from the show for me. But because we saw it in the very first trailer and every trailer going
there, never watch trailers.
Maya, how about you? Where do you stand with character Kate Bishop?
So I adore her. I think I mentioned this on the first episode stream we did, is I wasn't a fan of Hailee Steinfeld before this. So like, kind of just seeing her evolution, her evolution was so great. You know how a lot of superhero movies where it's like, okay, they just randomly become super talented in a very short amount of time. I felt like it was a very digestible, like, growth, like, from seeing her in the Hawkeye costume, kind of like fumbling, to being more mature with her, like, fighting and stuff. But I also think it's not even what makes her such a great character is not just because she's, like, badass with, like, her bow and arrow. It's the dialogue, and it's her human connection. She's such, like Sarah mentioned, a great people person. And it literally left me thinking, wow, I can't wait to see her interact with this person, like, all of our favorites in the MCU. I just am like, wow, like, for me to look forward to something like that shows that she's more of that person who does really well with team ups, can collaborate with people very easily. So I just loved how her strength, it was her skills as an archer are almost secondary, because she's just this phenomenal human being. So I really like that about her.
One relationship that they teased, that Clint said, I'm going to have to ask Scott about that. The fact that Scott and Clint are such good friends, like, I'm all for that, which means we have an obvious connection for Cassie and Kate to be introduced to each other. And the Kate, Avengers, like, right. if Ant-Man 3 Quantumania is really setting up the Young Avengers, like, it potentially could be, like, Kate could show up in Quantumania with Stature, and Cassie is Stature, and Kate is Hawkeye. Like, I am here for the character of Cassie Lang and Kate Bishop being second best friends, because Kate's already spoken for her best friend, and that's Yelena.
Wait, one more thing, too, because I don't know if y'all, maybe I'm overthinking this, because I know she's just Kate Bishop in the comics, but at the end when Hawk, she's like, what do you think about Lady Hawk or Hawk Eve? And then it ends with it ends with him saying, I have a better idea or something like that. Like, does she have another name in the comics?
I thought they meant Hawkeye, because then the Hawkeye title came up.
Yeah.
And that was like the sign of him passing his mantle on to her.
Okay.
Yeah, when he said I had another idea, and then it flashes the title card of Hawkeye, that's what his recommendation is. He's literally giving her the name.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was his retirement line.
Nice. So, and he's his second retirement line.
And he's
good point.
David says she showed up. Not only does she love and have fun being a superhero, but in her quieter moments, she showed that she has the proper motivation as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alex says, I have a better idea, and then the title comes up. So Alex took it the same way we did as well. Now I need to see Yelena and Scott Lang having a conversation. Oh, I bet if there's anybody in the world that loves mac and cheese as much as Yelena Belova, it is Scott Lang.
And you know Luis is bringing the delightful rosé.
I was at a wine tasting. It was mainly reds, and you know I don't like reds, man. You know, but there was a rosé that saved the day. It was delightful.
Rob said it earlier that Luis needs to be at that beer with 100%. Hammer and Trevor Slattery and Jack Duquesne. So, yes, I agree with that. Let's wrap up with the post-credit scene. I loved Rogers the Musical. I didn't need it as my only post-credit scene. I wanted a tease for the future. I wanted something, but we were all up in our feels for the holiday season. It is what it is. I think for the most part we got, and part of it is none of the song was a surprise, because I've been playing it on loop ever since the song became available after the first episode dropped. I'm assuming we're all okay with the post-credit scene in its existence, but nobody is super passionate about the fact that it's there. No.
I'm not a big musical person in general.
Well, so. I am.
I love.
I didn't need it. The cameos were fun, but I didn't need it.
Right. I don't know what
the cameos were like, because there was like musical cameos, like Broadway cameos, right? Like actual Broadway people.
Yes.
Like I would have enjoyed the musical if they panned out and we saw something new in the audience, like a recognizable face we're seeing. Because it's like great when we saw like Hawkeye there, but. It would have been dope to see Old Man Steve, or like the back of Old Man Steve's head.
Yelena was just in the city on a business trip, like trying to see, like, Yelena's reaction to the show would have been good. Like, honestly, if Scott Lang would have been like, I wasn't there, like, I just would have loved to see somebody in the audience. And they panned down to the audience at the end thinking that you're going to get something.
I know.
And you just don't. So I don't think it was super necessary. I think it could have easily been just a YouTube release on Facebook or something like that. I'm glad we got it. Especially if you're going to film it that many times. But it was as Main Mudrunner puts it, pure fan service. Like that, and the, I mean, it's fine. Like, it was one of the very few things, aside from Kate's mom behind the wheel, that car, did I mention that? really work for me in the show. But I think if we had seen Yelena's face watching that show, I think that would have made it.
That would have been hilarious.
Yelena's amazing, and I love her. I love her so much. So before we do move on, before we talk about wrap up, kind of our final thoughts on the entire series as a whole, I neglected to do this at the beginning of the episode, and I meant to do it first off. So let's get to it right now. It's my birthday. Happy birthday, Maya.
Oh my God. Happy birthday.
It is Maya's birthday. It is also what would have been the 99th birthday of this man. Mr. Stan Lee, his birthday and Maya's birthday, both tomorrow on the 28th of December. So happy birthday, Maya. It's so cool that you share a birthday with Stan the man.
Yes, it's an honor. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Wrapping up our final thoughts on this series as a whole. Sarah, I would like to hear your Mount Rushmore of moments from the series, as well as where it ranks among the five Disney Plus series that we got in 2021.
That is a tall order. My first one is just kind of it's not a moment, I'm sorry, but it's just a general comment. The comic book accuracies that we got, like the 76 Challenger, we got Grills, we got the coin snap.
When Grills showed up on the screen and he was at that party, I thought he was a goner and I was panicking.
I did too.
I was panicking.
And then morally, I think Kara talked about this, morally ambiguous Yelena, which is exactly how she is in the comics. You never really know where she stands. So I really liked that. Two, I liked the Jacques Duquesne, Eleanor bad guy swap, where you think it's going to be Jack. It's Jacques in the comics. Jack. And then they switch it and it's Eleanor. I thought that was cool. And then Yelena and Kate in the elevator. It's in my top two MCU elevator scenes. And then, go ahead and
say it. I think you said it was number one of elevator scenes.
I didn't want to start a fight, but yes, it might be my number one.
But it's not.
I'm sorry. And then Clint and Yelena on the ice rink, that cathartic closure moment for them both. And me.
Fair enough. Kara, you have 15 written down. Can you narrow it down to 4, or do you need to give us 11 honorable mentions? If you do, you are more than welcome to. You did already share where this series, Sarah, where did this series land for you?
Oh, dang. I think it might come in Loki, WandaVision, Hawkeye.
Top 3. I can understand that. Kara, how about you?
Yeah, so mine's at the top with Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah, I have a lot. I did a full Hawkeye rewatch today. I'm on holidays, so I didn't watch the whole thing. I tried to write down all my top moments. I'll try and not include the ones that we've already talked about. I did mention this one, but Clint being on the phone with his son, that was a top moment for me. The toy warehouse and the car fight scene, like both of those two feeding into each other, that's on the top. The opening 2012 scene where we see from Kate's perspective of Hawkeye and his, I love any kind of continuity pieces that we get, like a little bit of here to connect us to there. I love all of that. Kate and Clint's Christmas party, that whole thing where they're doing, I think Sarah mentioned it, where they're doing like the margaritas or whatever and the coin flip. But more than that is the conversation that they have, and then the little pieces of Clint's grief process that we get with his flashbacks to Nat. And then similar to that, I'm going to group this together so that it counts as one. When Kate falls off the roof and it mirrors Vormir with the Vormir music and Clint thinking that he lost her and then she's just hanging there.
You tried to kill me. No, I didn't. I completely anchored you down.
The blip scene, as you guys know, I love that scene. The macaroni chat, trick arrows we talked about, Jack telling Armand, remember when you peed your pants, everybody does. So such good delivery. The Kate and Yelena fight in the elevator, but also moving into the office where she's like, let's go get drinks. And she's like, yeah, okay. After I kill Clint, she's like, no. It's really good. And then, like I said, the fighting in slow-mo and then their chat on the ice and the whistle. So I just the whole series, basically. Mount Rushmore.
Fair enough. And Maya, how about you? Where does this rank in the shows we got this year?
So I would say it's Loki number one, and then Hawkeye is, in terms of series, right after it. I would say my Mount Rushmore, I had number one as the holiday montage. Kara mentioned it with them just, you know, her being able to buy all this stuff for the tree and everything to like replicate a Christmas he would have with his family. Two, Hawkeye on the phone with Nathaniel. That was a very emotional scene. And I think that really hit home too for me because my dad has hearing loss. So I got really emotional watching that. And then next, I would say Clint and Kate using all the trick arrows. So not actually them making them, but when we see the Pym arrow and things like that, I thought that was just so cool. It really made you think, like, wow, bow and arrows were boring until this series, like, like a big deal, like really cool. And then my last one is just their introduction to Maya. Like, we see her, she has all the speakers behind her. It's like this red light. It was just so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, having the speak, I'm like, that was the coolest way to introduce her character. So
true.
I really like that.
Yeah, so a few of mine got mentioned. I give Kara crap for having 15. I have 8. So I've got four honorable mentions. The first one is the introduction of Grills and the LARPing. Just cling, cling, cling. Like, just, the LARPing was great. And the fact
he didn't drink the potion.
Yeah, the fact that we got four of those characters back, like, for half the series, like, half the shows in the series was pretty surprising to me. We talked about it earlier when Hawkeye threw Kazi's gun, like, that scene. Is really funny. Jack,
hello sweetie,
I love Jack. And then Jack's mentioned at the arrow split where he, nice shot, yeah, no crap, like I thought it was great. But my Mount Rushmore of moments, kind of sequentially, is the opening scene. Kara talked about it, anything that builds continuity, but just that actress, that little girl, establishing her character, her relationship with her mother, how she really doesn't care about her mother near as much as her dad in the first place, and then her dad dies, but why she loves Clint, and it leads into that opening montage of building out who this character is and her winning all those medals and all those karate championships and everything else, worked really well for me. The next one is the beginning of the third episode where we get Echo's past, the fact that they got Alacqua Cox's real life cousin to play her because she looks exactly like her. And we just learn everything about who she is as a little girl, how tough she is, how she's always been tough and smart and an amputee and deaf, and she's made it to this point. Granted, she's a villain at this moment in time, but we knew she was gonna turn anyway. The next one is the 360 degree car chase scene. They run over Santa. The fact that Clint can't hear Kate and they have to learn to work together in that moment. We're not gonna steal a 76 Challenger. And then it ends with the giant Pym arrow was a massive surprise for me. And then my fourth moment is the girls' night, the mac and cheese. My daddy says it's good for you. That conversation with how hilarious and tense it is all at the same time, that was the number one scene of the show for me. For me, this Hawkeye does rank probably third of the shows. WandaVision, number one, never will be replaced for me. WandaVision was a cultural phenomenon in my own life, if nothing else. Loki and Hawkeye are really close, but I think I like Loki just a little bit better. But that has nothing to do with how not good Hawkeye was. That just has everything to do with how good the MCU is on Disney Plus. But I think we did it. I think we covered the Hawkeye series in general. We were going to talk a little bit of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. The trailer dropped online, but we'll save that for another time. We've got plenty of time to talk about that. We don't know when we're going to get our next MCU content. We assume that is going to be the series of Moon Knight. I would, my best guess, end of February, early March, after the Book of Boba Fett is over. Multiverse of Madness is the next film, and that is due out on May 6th. I think we're going to get Moon Knight and She-Hulk before that, but I don't know for sure. But there's a lot coming. She-Hulk, I'm so excited for that show. That show looks like, we know nothing about it other than the fact that it's Tatiana Maslany and it's going to be awesome. And we know Mark Ruffalo is coming back. Mark Ruffalo is Mark Ruffalo in the Shang-Chi post-credits scene, and he's not the Hulk. So what's going on there? We may get that answered for us. And we know Tim Roth is coming back as the Abomination in that one as well. We saw him, at least we saw the Abomination in Shang-Chi. I don't know if he was played by Tim Roth at that moment in time, but a lot of good stuff coming from the MCU on Disney Plus. Next week on Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, we will be doing a 2021 year in review, a bit of an awards show. So keep on the lookout in this Diz Life group for a survey to fill out, cast your vote for the awards for the Disney Plus, or excuse me, the Marvel Studios awards. I will simply give out the award now for best movie of the year. And that is Spider-Man No Way Home. Congratulations to Spider-Man No Way Home on hitting the $1 billion mark. First one to do it post-pandemic. That movie's incredible. If you haven't had a chance to see it and you can do so safely, please go do it. If you have not caught Earth's Mightiest Weirdo Spider Sunday, these three ladies were featured on that episode, as well as many, many other weirdos from around the country talking about Spider-Man No Way Home. We are lifting the spoiler ban next week, where we can at least talk a little bit more about Spider-Man No Way Home in depth. We obviously won't break it down like we did on Spider Sunday, but you have that warning there. Sarah, anything else you need to plug before we get out of here?
No, we're good. Thank you.
Check out the Nerd Emporium on Instagram. Kara, you said the most Canadian thing I've heard earlier. You said Boxing Day and I'm on holiday. Two very Canadian sentences.
I do what I can. Kara, give people what they want.
Kara, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yeah, thanks for having me on here. I loved the show. So.
And Maya, happy birthday. I think we need to play it again.
It's my birthday!
If you can get any more of the Grandmaster, it belongs. Maya, happy birthday.
Thank you. And thanks for everyone in the comments who said something that was really nice.
All right, guys. Well, until next week, for the children.